welcome back. Week two, primetime props coming at you. Before we get going, guys, I just want to say that I picked the over on the Friday night kickers last week, and I cashed them both. That's all I need to say. My job here is done.
Yeah, Jeff, you were coming in hot with kicker props, and you know I kind of gave you some crap for it, but there's a niche for you. Maybe you will be our kicker guru every week, like Jeff's kicking corner all day, extra points and field goals only.
I'm going to have to take a deeper dive into that. Anyway, I'm Jeff Edelstein. I'm hosting the show today. We don't want to listen to anything I have to say outside of, I guess, kicker takes. Joined by a pair of Justins, Justin Carlucci, Justin Bales. Afternoon, fellas.
Good afternoon.
Any big overview sites, you know, anything that you're looking at this slate that jumps out at you? Like, to me, I was saying before we went on the air, I'm a big DFS guy. I feel like it's a big jumble right now. I feel like nothing really is jumping out at me. I'm hoping this show kind of clarifies some things, you know, at least on the prop side. Give me some ideas for my DFS lineup because I feel like I'm drowning. I have all this FanDuel credit, as I know you do too, Luch, to get through. I say we get on with it. Let's first game on the slate Sunday. Ravens coming off that tough loss to the Bills on Sunday night. They're 11.5-point favorites at home against the Browns, 45.5 total. Bales, big dog. You think he's going to get how angry is he coming into this week after the he's pretty easy to tackle, they're saying over there in Cleveland.
Yeah, I don't look into narratives very much. I don't think that narratives are a good way to go about making bets and whatnot. I think this is a good narrative to tackle. I mean, they asked, what was it, Grant Delpit, I think, how hard Derrick Henry is to tackle. He said not hard. Derrick Henry has since responded, saying that he saw it. 11.5-point favorites. Henry's already, you know, the most difficult running back in the NFL to tackle. Now he probably is going to try to make a little bit of a point there, coming off elite game against Buffalo. On top of it, the other key to it is just that Cleveland has the defensive line to get pressure on opposing quarterbacks. I don't think that you can really just flat out pressure Lamar the way you can other guys, but why wouldn't they just run the ball over and over and over? Any Derrick Henry prop, you're going to find me betting on. One touchdown, minus 210. That's a little too rich for my blood. Yeah. But basically everything else, I know that they can't bump his lines to like over 100 yards, but I'm throwing the alts 100+. I think you can go like 120+, even higher if you want. I mean, we just saw him absolutely dominate Buffalo, and I believe he averaged over 6 yards a carry against Cleveland last year. I don't think it's going to be much different here.
Yeah, I think I like the fact, I mean, the Ravens coming off that loss, you got to feel like there's a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, plus the comments. The only thing that holds me back a little bit is, you know, the Cleveland's played them pretty well over the last few years. And, you know, I don't want to say they've stymied Lamar, but they've kind of held the Ravens offense in check. But yeah, this just feels like it feels like it's the 11.5 points feels right.
Every year it's Derrick Henry's going to slow down. Derrick Henry's going to slow down. Hell, the Titans wouldn't even pay him. And that goes right through my heart. Massive week two line, 95.5 on a week two rushing line for anybody on God's green earth is crazy. And that's what we're looking at on FanDuel with Derrick Henry this week. But you're right. The guy has shown zero signs of slowing down. And if he does, it's disguised behind a fantastic offensive system with fantastic offensive playmakers that these defenses have to honor. I can't think of a better way, for anybody that's aging to be in a system with none other than Lamar Jackson, right? That RPO, that quick fraction of a second where the defense has to be on their heels because you have historically the best rushing quarterback since probably Michael Vick that we've seen in the NFL. What a just ridiculous game, Buffalo and Baltimore. I know we don't go backwards on the show, but that might have been the game of the season already. That being said, Matt Milano's great. That Buffalo front seven, I had some reserves about them last year. I still have some questions about them in 2025. I know Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson go out there and dominate anybody. I'm trying to bring up some Cleveland rushing defense numbers. They held Chase Brown in check, and I don't know if that was just a case of getting dominated up in the trenches. According to Fantasy Points data, Chase Brown led the NFL with 7 missed tackles forced last week, and he only had about 40-some-odd yards in the box score to show for it. So I think we're going to tell a lot about, you know, this Baltimore offense and Derrick Henry, and we'll see what this Cleveland Browns defense has.
So are you in agreement on the overs for Henry this week?
Like we mentioned last week, the beautiful thing is about betting, you don't have to bet something. It's not a peer-to-peer game. So I'm probably not taking Henry all totals. I kind of want to wait and see on this one. Plenty of spots in the slate to attack, though, but it should be fun.
Anything else in this game catch any of your eyes?
For me personally, I love just kind of the Cleveland offense. It's their passing offense in this game. I do think one of my favorite things in the NFL, because it is so hard to predict, is when you have – basically a Vegas line that aligns with the way that you think a game goes. 11.5 spread. We basically know what both team is going to want to do in that case. Obviously, they're going to want to pound the rock with Derrick Henry. That means though, as they get the large lead later in the game, Cleveland's going to have to throw the ball. We know Joe Flacco can still spin it. He looked great last week. The other thing is that Cleveland's basically everyone on that offense is priced relatively low. We have both wide receivers. I believe they're Jerry Jeudy's in what, the 60s, and Cedric Tillman's at like 41 or something. That's what he was yesterday. I think both of them are nice. I think that Tillman's the guy that you probably want to go with there. You can also throw to running backs, tight ends. Fannin was targeted, 9 times last week. Samson had a ton of screens thrown his way. I think that both of them are solid options as well. I don't think that you obviously go with 4 different players for Cleveland. That's not the route that you want to take on props. But I think you pick your favorite spots, you go with that. For me personally, it would be Cedric Tillman for the line that they currently have set. But I do think that based on what you like in the game, all 4 of those options make a little bit of sense, and you can kind of pick and choose what you want.
This is a really good game to talk about, and don't worry, there are some stinkers, so I'm okay taking some time on this one. But I want your take on Harold Fannin. You just mentioned him. Like, they don't really have a solidified third receiver, so I'm not saying Fannin will perform, you know, to his week one debut every week, but he ran routes on 60% of dropbacks for a rookie who wasn't totally highly touted, right? Not super high draft capital. Like you said, he had a massive target share. I think he can carve out a nice little role. I'm still okay with hitting his props. Joe Flacco, you talked about, you know, him a little bit. He was sitting at 232.5 on Bet365 up until yesterday. I don't know why. It was about 6 or 7 yards lower than any other book. That number has crept back up there. So in a game script that you think would be negative, and like you said, Flacco can still spin it a little bit. I like Flacco and Harold Fannin, and you know, much like we talked about the Bills front 7, I do have some question marks about the Ravens secondary a little bit here. They finally got a little bit exposed. It took a really long time in that Bills game. But I think the negative game script really helps guys like Flacco, Fannin, and Tillman as well.
Yeah, the one thing about Fannin, Fannin's at 36.5 on the yardage. Njoku is at 40.5. I feel like, I don't know, I like Njoku here. I like a little bit of a bounce back here. While I think Fannin is obviously very talented, and if you're like you're in the best ball streets, you're very well familiar with them all summer long. But I'm not ready to say that he's – I'm not going to call him fool's gold, but I'm not ready to call him gold just yet. I'd like to see one more week.
I feel like there's a little
scratchy itchy there.
I was just going to say, I'm surprised the sample size police wasn't knocking at the door. It's a 1-game sample. We saw how good Njoku was with Joe Flacco. Just lastly, and we can wrap it up on the other side, Zay Flowers. I mean, yes, he is a clear monster part of that offense. I think the advanced under the hood stuff is obviously unsustainable. 47% target share, 54% air yard share would be historical unheralded numbers, but it is positive that he has maybe taken another step in this Baltimore offense as being even more integral. And sans Isaiah Likely definitely helps his role as well.
Yeah. All right, let's go down to Tennessee, where the Rams are coming in as 5.5-point favorites over the Titans. Total set at 41.5. Luch, I know you have an eye on this game.
Yeah, Bales and I both do for different reasons. And it's weird seeing the national media giving Flowers to a Titans player or quarterback. You look at the box score last week. It was pretty brutal for Cam Ward. You look at everything else. You look at some of the film. I'm a data guy, but I do believe data and film in this sport of football supplement one another. I think both when they're isolated can be misleading, and there are stories to tell, especially when they're put together. As they say nowadays, the Tennessee Titans skill players and Brian Callahan sold Cam Ward last week. Cam Ward showed a lot of poise. He threw a lot of good balls. He was missing multiple offensive linemen by the time the fourth quarter rolled around. There was about six or seven drops. Yes, he's throwing the ball really hard. But 196.5 feels like a really nice number against this Rams secondary who, you know, I'm not trying to poo-poo on LA here, but Denver's arguably the best defense in football. They were at home, an opener. Vance Joseph loves to blitz. It was a total mismatch. I think the time's now to jump on Cam Ward overs. I don't particularly think we'll see a 196.5 number maybe for the rest of the year. And you know, correlating with that, obviously there was no data from week one, but 55.5 for the bona fide number one wide receiver on Tennessee, who I'm sure, you know, will have some more design looks from Brian Callahan this week. It's going to be near impossible for him to have another brutal floor game like that. Even Alec Iomanner played over 70% of the snaps, had a ton of unused air yards here. 33.5. I love taking advantage of alt lines and ladders when the regular props are really low and we haven't seen it yet. And Bale's rights are ladders on props, so he's familiar with the ladders game here. It's just so much more comforting getting like a 50 or 60 plus number on a guy like Iomanner, who's going to play 70% of the snaps again against less inferior competition and a quarterback and honestly a play caller and Brian Callahan, where we should see a little bit of positive progression in week two. I'll throw it over to you.
Yeah, I think you're spot on in that type of situation. I think that Iomanner is kind of the guy that I'm looking at for Tennessee here. Last week, he was, what I believe, fifth in air yards. He had 133, 19 ADOT. They love throwing the ball deep to him. One of the biggest keys that I believe early in the NFL season is that when coaches show you something, you have to listen to them. They showed us in preseason that they want to throw the ball deep to Iomanner. They did that in the first game as well. Why would we expect anything different? This type of I don't love the matchup against the Rams. I don't think that it's, you know, as good as it could possibly get. It's way easier than against Denver. That's just kind of how it works. Denver's defense is legitimately top of the NFL. It's a much better spot for someone like that. On the other side, I think that you kind of just need to continue to go with Puka Nacua. I think he's kind of like a props darling in the sense that you don't draft him in best ball and season long as high as he should go because you're constantly worried that he's injured. Well, your floor raises when you're playing props. If he gets injured, you lose one prop and you kind of lose out that week, but it's not going to kill you over the entire season. Last week, he absolutely dominated Houston, who has a relatively good secondary. I don't think that Tennessee's anywhere near them. And the huge thing about Nacua is that he ran 22 routes. He got hurt early in the game. I believe that he had a cut above his eye. He came out with like this huge bandage on it and whatnot. 22 routes, and he had 11 catches for well over 100 yards. They can't really set his props as high as they need to be, and they're kind of set as if he's like playing like he's going to get injured.
It's 6.5. His reception prop is 6.5. Eight out of his last nine games, he's hit that.
He's also just absurdly efficient. If you look, his efficiency is someone that catches the ball around the line of scrimmage, and he doesn't. It's at the moment, they can't make Nakua's props high enough right now.
Yeah, I don't agree. I mean, I think that the 6.5 catches, assuming, I mean, I think the only way he doesn't get that is if he loses a limb. And even at that point, I'm not sure I'd bet against it.
He could still get there with one arm.
I think so.
I don't know if it's a contrarian take or if I'm more going to take this over for DFS this week instead of betting, but you know, Davante Adams just suddenly doesn't exist. And I don't mean that as it's detrimental to Puka. The brilliance of betting Rams receivers is Sean McVay is a mastermind. Oh, Stingley's on the other side of Houston. He's going to follow Puka. Sean McVay will move whoever he wants, wherever he wants. He will take the opposition star player out of the game, like the modern day Bill Belichick. Right? Like, we'll take Stingley out of the game and Puka went crazy. Legarius Sneed's still on a snap count for Tennessee. They have a really, really young team. You know, I like that 58.5 number for Devontae Adams, and he didn't have a ton to show for it last week, but Fantasy Points said he had a 29% air yard share, which is nothing to sneeze at, and a 27% target share. So between him and Puka, the next highest target share was 6.9% on the team. We're seeing a really condensed target tree. Now, speaking of injuries this week, the Rams are without two starting guards, so you know, who knows? I mean, Matthew Stafford, obviously, how do you get him uncomfortable? You go north-south and make him move a little bit. But McVay has shown so much success with Stafford in the past by just moving the pocket, running some really easy play fake type stuff, moving that pocket for the old man, and he's still able to grip it and rip it. So I think there's a world where both of these receivers go over, and even if the game script isn't great for the Rams, like they're very easy numbers and such a condensed target tree for both of them to go over. God forbid Tennessee plays with a lead early. I think you could look at a field day for St. Louis Rams props. I don't even know what year it is with the LA Rams receivers props this year.
Very good. All right, let's move it on. Let's go to Detroit, where the Lions come home as 6.5-point favorites over the Bears. Total there set at 47.5. And Bales, I know you want to talk about a fella whose name comes out of, I believe, Deuteronomy.
Yeah, Olamide Zaccheaus. I don't understand it. I posted this. They played on, what, Monday? I posted this on Monday. I don't understand what they're doing with his props. Essentially, if you look at the way he played in preseason, one, he was very good in preseason. Two, Chicago very clearly stated that he was one of their starting receivers. I know everyone loves Luther Burden. I like him a ton too. At some point, he's going to take over snaps. It's not right now. The Bears already showed us that they're fine running with Zaccheaus in major snaps. In week one, he was third on the team, obviously behind Adunze and DJ Moore. That makes sense. That's exactly what we're looking at because those two are going to play when there's a two wide receiver set. He then, I believe it was, what, six targets, posted over 40 yards, and now we're getting him back at 24.5 yards. It doesn't make any sense, especially when you consider he can beat this with one catch. He broke out for Washington last year. They let him go off to Chicago. Looks great for them. When he was given the time in Washington, when he played the snaps, he constantly was over this type of number. I don't think he's the type of guy that's going to go get you 120 yards in a game. But at a prop in the mid-20s, I just don't see a reason as to why you would be looking under there, especially when you look at Detroit. How, granted, I don't know if Detroit is that bad, if Green Bay is that good. They just did it again against Washington last night. I do know that Goff struggles quite a bit when he doesn't have Ben Johnson, and I do know that Aaron Glenn's a very good defensive coordinator, so I think that Detroit's going to take a major step back. I still think that they're going to be a fine football team, and if that's the case, you know, Zaccheaus is going to be playing pretty heavy snaps, and he's going to get plenty of looks for, you know, such a short yardage total.
And currently, it looks like FanDuel doesn't know what they want to do with Zaccheaus either, because I can't find a yardage prop on the board. Yeah, so I don't have any other books open right now, so they're probably mulling it over themselves. We got them right where we want them, boys. Yeah, 20% target share last week, ran routes on over 50% of dropbacks. I am disappointed and not shocked in Colston Loveland, only routes on 44% of dropbacks. 19.5, though, man, like that's one catch. It could be one catch easily for this guy. So history doesn't always repeat itself. If I'm looking for, you know, like a 10th of a unit high ladder splash, it might be Colston Loveland, like 40 or 50 yards, just because he is such an athlete. And I think sooner than later, Ben Johnson's going to want to open it up for him. I keep thinking Sam Laporta, you know, and just Ben Johnson is a genius here. But I tell you what, after that first scripted drive last week, things didn't look nearly as hunky-dory, as they say, for the Bears. But just from the eye test, Caleb looked much more comfortable. Man, he looked fast. He's got some underrated wheels as well. And maybe some Caleb Williams rushing props while he's still running for his life. If there's one knock on the Bears offense, it's that offensive line. He was running for his life last week. And maybe we'll see some of that again.
You know, real quick before we move on to the next game, the one thing that is jumping out at me is I feel like the FanDuel and the books are, I think they're buying into the lines are not going to be anywhere near as good. I mean, I'm just looking at like Goff's number. You know, it's a 6.5-point game. This is not a game that, you know, that they're expecting to blow anybody out. 249. I mean, he hit that number real quick here. It looks like 10 times last year, and we know that they were playing with big leads a lot of the time last year. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 5.5 catches. I feel like, you know, I will not be surprised if the Lions come out and, you know, win this game 38-7, right? And I think though, and if you agree with that, this is the week to get those props on the Lions, because they're going to just go up if that's the case. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll throw it back to you in a second, Justin. Just, you know, my piggybacking off of that, we'll have to check with our resident Bears fan, Keith Eyster. But also, JJ McCarthy looked so much better in the second half last week. The Bears secondary was so banged up. Second string corners, you know, across the board, not making excuses. But again, maybe there's some more incentive if that secondary is way less than 100% to kind of go under the assumption that, you know, Green Bay is just really good and Detroit's not totally terrible. Plus, it was week one and things happen. First game without Ben Johnson. I really like the idea of going back to a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown for not only props, but DFS at a probable low ownership as well. Go ahead, Bills.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree with that. The other guy that I was kind of looking at that I think is in a pretty good spot is Jahmyr Gibbs receiving yards again. He's not going to have the 10 targets, 10 receptions that he had last week. But at the same time, we know that Dennis Allen loves to blitz. He loves to try to get pressure on the quarterback. We know that the Lions are trying to replace some high-level offensive linemen that, you know, they couldn't, and Green Bay got to them very fast. I don't expect that type of pressure, which ultimately is what led to 14 running back targets. But at the same time, the Lions are relatively comfortable throwing the ball to Gibbs. We already know that. He's a big playmaker, and kind of once you get him out in space, I feel like that's a way that they can start the game to kind of, you know, put Chicago on their heels a little bit, where Gibbs gets these big type of plays. And ultimately, you don't have to run him, you know, straight up the middle. You don't have to run behind two guys that proved that they weren't overly dominant in the run game last week. They couldn't handle Green Bay's front on that end. So I do think that Gibbs over his receiving yards again, even though he did just have the 10 catch game, I think that it's a pretty good spot here.
All right, let's go to my home state of New Jersey, where the Jets taking on the Bills at home in East Rutherford. Bills 6.5-point favorites, totals at 47.5. I feel like I'm hearing a little bit of buzz out there that the Bills might be walking into a trap here. But I know, Bales, you're looking at Mr. Palmer, Josh Palmer, to do something today. Is that true?
Yeah. So originally, my first initial thought was Keon Coleman. I am a huge Keon Coleman guy. I thought he showed plenty of flashes as a rookie. He looked great in week one. The problem is Sauce Gardner is arguably the best cornerback in the NFL. Normally, any other year, that wouldn't have been an issue for someone like Coleman. But this year, they have Aaron Glenn finally making Sauce Gardner shadow the one. I have no clue how it's been up until this point in his career that he hasn't been doing that. But if that's the case, he's going to shadow Coleman, I would assume, which leaves Josh Palmer just on a better spot for that. I don't think that the Jets defense is going to really stop Buffalo's offense. I do think the Jets offense is going to be way better. And I could see this being a potential trap situation like you're talking about. But really, that's better for receivers instead of a touchdown plus lead late in the game. And, you know, Palmer's the kind of guy, he saw plenty of targets last week. Very clear that he's going to play a huge role in the offense. And we can still get him in the mid-30s. It's just, he's the kind of guy that can pop off the top of the defense as well. It's not something that you would ever project, but one catch and he can beat his current total. It's just way too good.
Yeah, again, another guy that FanDuel said, yeah, you know what, maybe we'll pump the brakes and take him off the board for a second.
I'm just going with all guys.
Yeah, I'm trying to see, what's his line? I'm trying to look an underdog as we speak here. But yeah, Palmer looked good. 35.5 on underdog, so I'm sure his line is kind of about that across the industry right now. You know, week two is usually a time where I kind of like to take a stand and look for some regression, whether it's one way or another. And you know, we just talked about the Lions, and neither of us think they will kind of replicate the disaster that they were in week one. I like Breece Hall. He had a stranglehold on that backfield. There was a lot of smoke about Braylon Allen and a possible close to 50-50 split. And that was, you know, very sad for a lot of people drafting Braylon Allen in best ball. Still a candidate to make a trade before week four. There's some teams that are hurting for running backs, especially a team like the Commanders for now. We saw Tank Bigsby get moved earlier this week. You never know. But last year, Buffalo was the ninth worst team in rushing yards before contact allowed per attempt. Fantasy points is great, by the way. I use fantasy points a lot. And they were dead last week. And a lot of that is kind of an anomaly with all the running around Lamar was doing on some of those just absurd, like NFL top 100 player highlight reel montage moments type plays that he had. So that number's a little skewed, but they were by far the worst team against the run last week. I understand it was Derrick Henry. I understand it was Lamar Jackson. Those are two of the best players in the NFL in the last two decades, and they're in the same backfield. I understand that. But some of those holes, Jeff, I think you might have had 2 or 3 yards through a couple of them. I mean,
thank you for noticing that. Yeah, I think I can get through. Well, I mean, to your point, and you know, 1 week does not a season make, but Justin Fields and Breece Hall kind of look like, you know, 75% off versions of Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry last week.
Yes. What's that Walmart brand? The great value, like the great value brand of Lamar and Derrick Henry. And Breece Hall looked phenomenal. Jets were just such a disaster.
You know, I think if the Jets, I think this week have a lot. I really want to. They should have won that game. Okay, and that their offense looked better than anyone would have ever imagined. If they can repeat it this week, watch out. Like, because I think that, you know, this is a team that might surprise a lot of people. If they beat the Bills this week, you're going to start hearing people are going to be jumping on this bandwagon very quickly.
My two last thoughts, and I'll shut up. 58% snap share for Breece Hall last week. In the modern day NFL, that's a workhorse in this day and age. And I feel like, you know, his 59.5 number, that just might be a little low. I think, you know, odds makers are just maybe a little historical for performance from last year. I think people are worried about a negative game script. But, you know, talk about like pass rate over expectation. The Jets still ran the snot out of the football last week. So I really think they're a team that could be down 10 early third quarter and still running their offense, which is running the RPO stuff and running the football. So, and the last caveat is Ed Oliver got ruled out, I believe I saw, for this weekend. Yeah. And he was, for the plays that the Bills did make last week, it was Ed Oliver, and that was it. So he's a major blow as well. I do like Breece Hall.
Bales, anything else you like in this game?
No, that's it. I'm actually on Breece Hall as well, so I think that's a great call.
Hammer it, baby. I like it.
All right, let's go down to Big D, Dallas, where the Cowboys are 4.5-point favorites at home against the still led by Russell Wilson, New York Giants, 44.5 total. Can Malik Nabers continue doing okay with Russell Wilson, Lucci? I mean, what do you think?
I'm gonna have to go back to it, and I did. I got his line at 70.5 right when it opened this week, and I think that is long gone by now. 76.5. Listen, I know it's not everyone's favorite thing to, you know, put bets in on Wednesday, but that's when the closing line value is. I'm hitting Nabers alt totals. He just had ridiculous numbers. I'm just gonna have to give Russell Wilson the benefit of the doubt that he has an ounce of competency left in him. And who knows how long his leash is. Is it halftime? If it's really ugly, and as long as it's not a 30-point game, at least they'll be throwing. I mean, 29% target share last week, a just like unworldly 68% air yard share of the entire Giants offense. Like, all we need is a little bit of positive regression. And Deron Bland is out for Dallas for a couple of weeks, which is a huge blow to their secondary. I'm in on Malik Nabers. I'm okay with playing this thing up to like 78, 79.5. And, you know, fool me once, shame on you. If Russell Wilson stinks again, I'll have to reevaluate things next week.
Bales, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm never going to talk you off of Malik Nabers. That's the way I look at it.
There's a butt coming, right?
No, I'm not going to play it myself. I don't trust Russell Wilson. And, you know, Dallas plays the deep. So I guess he's going to see a ton of volume. So I think that that's a fine play for me. I'm just going right back to CeeDee Lamb. I mean, he's coming off of what is somehow simultaneously an amazing game and the worst potential game of his career. He dropped 110 yards, seven catches, 13 targets. His air yards were over 180. He had 4 drops. I mean, that doesn't happen. And CD Lamb feels like the type of player to me that he's going to want his get back sooner than later. I don't see anyone in New York being able to guard him. I don't really see Dallas once again just pounding the rock over and over. I think they're going to rely on Dak. Even if they get to a decent lead, they're just going to keep throwing it throughout most of the game. And if that's the case, you can't really put three guys on CD Lamb with George Pickens over there anymore. It's just not something you can do. I think that Lamb's a guy that we're going to want to ladder this week. He's in just a really good spot to go crazy.
I like Dallas here a lot. It feels like it's happened, a billion years ago already, that opening night game. They should have won that game. Dallas should have won that game. Like, it's just that simple. They look great. Take those drops away. They look great. Their defense look pretty good even. I don't know. I feel like this is, the homecoming game. And the Giants are just, as long as Russell Wilson is behind center, nothing good is going to happen. He looked terrible last week.
I'm kind of dropping Dak in the same bucket as our Cam Ward conversation. If you look at the box score, you're like, this guy sucked. Wow, shocker. Prescott was terrible week one. But, boy, you mentioned that, right? He looked fantastic, and that one wasn't on him. So I'm with you. I think this game is sneaky for a lot of reasons. If Russell Wilson just kind of shows up, I think we could see more points than implied by Vegas. I'm not a big first touchdown guy, but I hate the fact that Javonte Williams in this day and age is even like minus 120, minus 125 to score. I mean, it's just crazy. Between nerfing touchdowns and nerfing home runs, like a couple years ago, it was fun to bet home runs because you could get 80% of the league at least like 4-1. Vegas said, we're cutting that crap down. So I kind of like the idea of Dallas kind of moving the ball. And if I'm going to, gamble, if I'm going to YOLO one first touchdown this week, it's probably going to be Javonte Williams. I mean, he looked good. You look at all the advanced under the hood stuff. The Giants were terrible against the run in week one as well. And Miles Sanders fumble, I think, got him in the doghouse a little. Jaden Blue was inactive week one. I think his wheels up for Javonte Williams again in week two. And it was probably a chalky pick, but not all chalk is bad.
Well, the thing about Williams, I mean, let's remember when he came up with the Broncos, he was super talented, then, the brutal knee injury. Now he's a year and a half out now. And maybe he's back. I mean, wouldn't be the biggest surprise if that's the case. Speaking of people who are back, Mac Jones is back in our life, as he's going to be quarterback in the Niners, who are 3-point favorites in New Orleans with a 40.5 total. Whoever wants to grab this first, could go ahead and grab it. But I want to say this. I feel like this game has potential to be like the Steelers-Jets game, right? Where no one thinks that this game is going to go anywhere, but maybe it does. I mean, I don't know. This game feels weird to me. How's that for analysis?
I agree with you. I think this game has pretty quiet shootout potential. Mainly, the number one thing, one, I think the Saints are better than people give them, because I actually think that Rattler's not that bad of a quarterback, whereas most people kind of project him as like not even being close to an NFL QB. And like, he's fine. Like, he's not good. He's a solid backup, and they'll get their guy next year. But Mac Jones, also reasonable quarterback.
Yeah.
And
look what he did last year with the Jags.
Yeah. And Kyle Shanahan, I don't know how you guys feel about him. I'm not a Brock Purdy guy. I don't think Purdy's great. Put him on almost any other team, and he's not that good of a quarterback. Like, it's not as far of a drop off as we think. It's pretty fine, in my opinion. I think obviously Purdy has more mobility than Mac Jones. But outside of that, I think that they're not necessarily, I don't know if similar is the right word to use in this scenario, but it's not going to be this huge drop off for them. It's Kyle Shanahan's offense, and that's what's so good about it. So yeah, I think if people are really dropping it down because Mac Jones is taking over, I think that's wrong. I think this does have, a little bit of shootout potential.
And let's not forget, you go back to that draft. I remember I was betting heavy on that draft, Trey Lance, Mac Jones, and, I guess Justin Fields was the other quarterback. Is that right? Was it Fields that was the other quarterback? I can't remember. But I do remember there was all this buzz that Shanahan wanted Jones. Mm-hmm. Ownership wanted Lance. They went Lance. So in a way, not only might Mac Jones might not be that much of a downgrade from Purdy, it's possible that in Shanahan's eyes, it's an upgrade from Purdy, you know? And, you know, they signed Kendrick Bourne, who played with Jones. Pearsall looked great last week. McCaffrey apparently is, as long as he's healthy, he's going to be getting fed the rock. And on the other side of the ball, we know where it's going, but you got Kamara, Olave, and Shahid. Juwan Johnson showed up last week. There seems to be enough offense to go around here that this game should fly over that 40.5 total.
Well, I'll start with Ricky Pearsall. That's my guy for this week. I like that 57.5 number. Just a 20% target share last week, but Juwan Jennings got banged up. I know he practiced, but who's to say he's going to make it through another game? George Kittle's obviously out. And people forget, you know, go back to Mac Jones. He supported Brian Thomas for most of last season.
Yeah.
The Brian Thomas that everyone's drafting at the tail end of the first round, who had a phenomenal year. Mac Jones in a pre-Liam Cohen system. Was it Liam Cohen last year? I don't even know.
No, he was with the Bucs last year.
All right, that's right. Exactly. So no Liam Cohen. So he had, you know, crap offense, et cetera. Now you put him in the Shanahan offense. There's going to be some easy design stuff to get him going, and I think it's going to be for Pearsall. He's the most explosive athlete, outside of McCaffrey right now. And boy, does life come at you fast. We're in week two, and we thought we'd be talking about a McCaffrey injury, and it's everybody else that's fallen apart already for the 49ers. So I think, you know, that's some tough luck there. What do you think about that Pearsall number, Bales? And then I have some stuff to talk about for the same side.
Yeah, I think it's low. We saw him get a ton of air yards in week one. I think that it's pretty clear that he's going to be their wide receiver one. I think the more that he performs that way, I think that the more he's likely to just jump Jennings regardless of injury status. And I mean, if you're going to consistently throw a guy the ball down the field, under 60 yards is always a relatively good number for it, especially when I don't necessarily know if I want to say that it feels like they're downgrading from Purdy to Mac Jones. But it feels like this is a little bit low of a number for Pearsall, regardless of who the quarterback is.
Yeah, and just about New Orleans, like, do we know the ball's going to Kamara through the air? Do we know that? Two targets last week, that's un-Kamara-like. Do we have a little bit of a changing of the guard in terms of the system? I think it's great for Juwan Johnson. I like the Juwan Johnson number. I'm going to believe in that because he didn't come off the field. He played almost 100% of the snaps, 23% target share. The game was a little bit negative game scripty, but it wasn't like a slaughter. So yeah, I think Juwan Johnson is a good look in the mid 30s there as well. And I think the jury's out. I think if we see another dud from Kamara through the air, I think it's safe to wonder if there's a total philosophical change there in New Orleans.
I trust Kellen Moore, and yeah. Kellen Moore looked like he wanted to get Juwan Johnson the ball. On top of that, he left production on the table. I don't know if you guys saw, he dropped the touchdown that would have tied the game. If they're feeling comfortable enough to, I don't want to say design plays, but essentially go to Juwan Johnson with the game on the line, throwing him, obviously, I believe it was a seam in the end zone. And then he just, it was in his hands. He dropped it. I mean, it's a low number for the amount of volume that he's getting. And I think that people generally are slow to catch up to what's happening. I do think that the week two is the biggest confirmation bias week in the NFL. Week one, if you didn't like a player, if they didn't play well, you were right. They're a terrible player and they're never going to do well again. If you do like a player, they go off again, you were right. And you know, they're the best player in the league. So kind of working around your confirmation biases is probably the most difficult part of week two, I think personally. But Juwan Johnson is a guy that, just based on how they're using him, how much he was on the field, the type of production and volume he got, it's a bit too low of a number for the time being.
If I may quickly say, Jeff, yeah. If you guys like what you're watching, please get over there to YouTube. Give us a follow. Hit that like button. You know, every view counts. We appreciate you all. All of our content on props is all free. We have a ton of articles. Every slate. Tons of football articles. You name it, we got it. Bales has a bunch of stuff up. I have a bunch of stuff up. Everyone, anytime touchdown, first touchdown, wide receiver props, running back props, quarterback props, ladder props, you name it. We got stuff up there. Appreciate y'all for tuning in. Back to you, Jeff. Thanks.
I was going to say the sound you just heard was me putting a Niners Saints game stack into the Millie Maker. Because that feels Millie Makery right there. So we'll say that. Speaking of confirmation bias, the drop dead funniest line of the week here. The Dolphins, who everyone has written off, are 2.5-point favorites at home against the Patriots, who everyone thought was they were the Patriots. Oh, the Patriots, we're going to cut Drake May. We're going to have the greatest season. They fell flat on their face at home. The Dolphins basically imploded last week, and yet here we are, 2.5-point favorites at home against the Patriots, 43.5 total. If ever there was a game that scares the hell out of me on both sides of the ball, it's this one. But we do have Boutte. How do you say his name? You go Boutte?
Oh, you go with that. I'm not 100% sure how to say his name.
I think it's Boutte. He's hit like over 100 yards in 3 of his last 4 games or something like that. And was like LSU's like top guy before he got hurt in his sophomore year. So maybe the Patriots have a diamond in the rough here. But anyone like Boutte? I don't know.
Yeah, I do. He's another guy that's just way too low. Like the way that he plays, the type of routes that he's running, the type of volume he's getting, it's very clear that New England wants him on the field. And I mean, that's the biggest thing with these guys. If you're getting the volume, the talent doesn't matter as much. I mean, you obviously still need to be talented, but all the NFL guys are talented. You need the volume. You need the matchup. That's basically where you're finding the success for like these types of props and whatnot. And people forget that, yeah, at LSU, he was expected to be the guy
right.
When they had that string of wide receivers go out and, you know, he got hurt. It didn't pan out as well as everyone was expecting. But I don't think many people were questioning his natural talent. And now that he's kind of in the NFL, he's now into the starting lineup. I believe he ran more routes than Stephon Diggs did last week. I believe he led New England in routes run. Against Miami, who doesn't play defense, why are we setting the number so low? Like it just doesn't add up to me. For what it's worth, I do think this game overall, I prefer the over. Neither team has a good defense. Christian Gonzalez was just ruled out. So there's virtually no one that's going to guard Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle over on the Miami side. I think that Tyreek Hill is a really good option because you can get chunk plays against New England when they don't have Christian Gonzalez in there. So I think that someone like Tyreek Hill is a really good option as well. I like the over in this game. I think that both teams are going to be way better offensively than they are defensively.
I am baffled with New England. Like Mike Vrabel, he wants to play old school, hate in the mouth football. Now, Drake May threw 46 times, and the game script was fairly neutral. These are the teams that were top 3 in the NFL in pass percentage last week. Miami, because they were getting slaughtered from the beginning, it makes total sense. Negative game script. Kansas City came in at number 1, but the Patriots ranking number 3 there was not on my bingo card, especially in a game that really wasn't out of reach for them for almost the whole duration of it. So I think that helps plead the case for Boot. Maybe it's Boutte, depending on how he plays. I don't know. But I think Trevion Henderson's interesting. He's clearly the most talented back between him and Ramondre. Again, if there's anything I know about a Mike Vrabel or Mike Vrabel coaching tree, they're going to be stubborn. They're going to lean on the veterans as long as they can until the walls are caving in. And I hate that. Trust me, I hate that. We're talking about the guy who solely plays bad receivers because they can run block. I don't know. I guess Boot can block a little bit. But I'm interested in Henderson, and I'm interested in him with his receiving yards prop. He had 6 targets last week. You know, Drake May spread the ball out a lot, but if we're going to get 40-plus pass attempts from Drake May, if we see that again, I'm almost hoping that he's a little bit inefficient, and I hope that your Boot props cover, but I'm hoping he's a little bit inefficient so the market doesn't just catch up like crazy in week 3. Like you said, it'd be nice to get another week of some conviction and we can see some things again before we really start hammering it home for the rest of the year. But that's a big takeaway for me, you know, fairly neutral situations. New England was chucking it. Granted, they lost to the Raiders, so maybe they'll rethink their philosophy, but if that's what they want to do and they want to take the training wheels off Drake May, I don't think they're just going to abandon ship in week 2. And Miami looks awful. Like implosion by the end of September is possible. We're all about playing, you know, the week, especially for DFS. You want to take advantage of the overreactions. Miami is one team that I'm just not willing to invest in. I'm not touching the Dolphins this week. I will live with the results. I don't know, Jeff. Like, not even for the Millie. I'm out of Miami this week. I just want no parts of that train wreck.
Yeah, I think if I'm playing any Miami guys, I think it's in a game stack. You know, have you know the Patriots are cheap. You know, you go boot May a chain. I can't pronounce any of these guys' names, but maybe that's the route I could go. But yeah, I'll tell you, he's implode by the end of September. They lose this game, I think it's over. I think McDaniel doesn't have a job Sunday night. You know, if the Dolphins lose this game at home. All right, let's go to Cincinnati. Highest total of the week, 49.5. Bengals, 3.5-point favorites over the Jaguars. Both teams didn't exactly blow up on offense last week as we expected them to. The first thing that pops out at me, and Bells, I'll throw it to you here, is Liam Cohen. You know, we know that he likes using one running back as best as he can. You know, we saw what happened with Bucky Irving last year. Etienne looked great last week. His numbers at 52.5 rushing yards, to me, that feels very low.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not opposed to it. I'm not personally, I haven't played that. I did look at it and I don't hate it or anything. I just think that this game has a decent amount of shootout potential. So I kind of favor the passing game in those type of games.
Sure.
Yeah, I think ETN's a good option because you basically know he's going to be getting the early down work. Then Allen comes in on the obvious passing downs, and Tootin is the kind of the extra guy that gets a few carries. I think that's completely fine. For me personally, I like Trevor Lawrence's pass completions. It's only set at 21.5, which is like shockingly low when you know that. Really, last week, if you take out the drops, he would have beat it. And they essentially were just running the ball quite a bit late in that game because they were up so much. I also think that Brenton Strange is kind of I buy his breakout. I don't necessarily know if we would refer to it as a breakout. I think that he's a good player. I don't think that he's the type of guy that gets, you know, the 10 targets in a game. But Cincinnati, pretty historically in recent seasons, has struggled against tight ends. Strange has, I believe his prop is in the low 30s. So it's just a pretty reasonable number when you look at, I know that Brian Thomas Jr. is going to get his targets. They kind of, I'm assuming they're going to do like a squeaky wheel gets the grease type of deal there. Travis Hunter, they said, is going to play more defense. Personally, I don't think that takes any, I guess, much of his offense away. I think that he's still going to be, you know, much more of the offensive type of player. But Strange is kind of the guy that goes overlooked, and we still have a relatively low number on him. So I think, you know, he gets his 5 to 6 targets, and I think that's a pretty reasonable number for him.
Yeah, there's no way, shape, or form that I'm buying that the Bengals defense is suddenly above average. So I'm with you. I like Travis Hunter. He's at, 43.5? Is that what I have here? Let's see. Just passed it. Yeah, I hit him at 40.5 Wednesday. 25% target share, led the team. He had the most design plays out of any receiver ran for him. So they were trying like hell to get Travis Hunter the ball. I know there's some reports coming out this week. He's going to play a little bit more defense. I'm not worried. This guy's locked into 11 personnel snaps. He ran routes on 75% of the dropbacks. So another guy who's heavily involved and nothing to really show for it, that if you're talking about a ladder play, you know, I'd much rather take Travis Hunter at 60 than kind of flirting with a receiver who's established and have to worry about 90 or 100 plus yards. I like Travis Hunter in this one as well.
You know, something that was jumping out at me is Chase Brown receiving. It's at 17.5. Last year, once he took over as the lead back, 7 out of 8 games, he hit that number. You know, he's the bell cow. He's out. He's going to be out there. Any takes on that?
Yeah, I think that's fine. I know that they talked about wanting to get him involved more in the passing game anyway.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a good number. I also, personally, I like Joe Burrow. If you looked at, like, if you watched the game last week, Bryce Young's receivers cost him legitimately like 100, 150 yards or something. It was absolutely insane. They had that McMillan catch that they ruled not a catch, and because there was pass interference, they just chose not to challenge it. It didn't matter because, you know, they got the PI there. That would have been like an extra 50 yards or whatever it was. So I think that you're going to be able to throw against Jacksonville. And Chase Brown, yeah, it's a low number for him. I think that it's pretty good there.
Yeah, my favorite thing about picking on the Jags is they just keep playing man defense. The last 2 years, they play so much man coverage. What does that mean? You get a ton of one-on-one situations. Liam Cohen's going to be able to move around guys, get the matchup he wants. So I agree. I think there's going to be some yards in this one. I think this is a game, though, that the public's not afraid of because I think they have more confidence in kind of both of these defenses being kind of bad and those offenses kind of get going. No one's really talking about the lengthy weather delay in that Jags-Carolina game. I think screwed them, too, much like we saw the wheels fall off in Dallas and Philly after the weather delay. It was just kaput. There was absolutely nothing. I do like Chase Brown again, too. You know, I mentioned earlier in the show he forced 7 missed tackles, which led the NFL. Had nothing to show for it in the box score rushing-wise, but to me that shows he's dynamic, he's elusive, and he is the 2025 bell cow, one of the few of them, Jeff.
What's with these weather? I'm old enough to remember when it didn't matter what was happening. You know, God himself could be, you know, like sending lightning bolts, and they finished the game. You know, this is, you know, when men were men.
Let me guess. You walked to school in 3 foot of snow too, right?
It's you did damn right I did. Once that weather delay happened in the Cowboys game, I'm like, all right, good night. I'm not sticking around for that. All right, we're going from the highest total to the lowest total here. We're going to Pittsburgh. Steelers 3-point favorites at home over the Seahawks, 39.5. Blech. How's that for a take?
Yeah.
I hate that I like this game.
Sell me.
Obviously last week, you know, the Jets, the Steelers had the lowest total and then they went and, you know, they both dominated. The thing that I like here is, and I would have never projected this coming into the season, Seattle and Pittsburgh both are playing fast. I believe they both rank in the top 10. If not, they're very close to the top 10 in the NFL in seconds per play this season. Obviously it's one game. Different stuff happens, but neither of those two games were so out of reach or anything, or they were playing from so far behind that they're going to speed up their clock that much. And I mean, if you're getting a ton of plays off most of the time, you know, eventually stuff happens where you score. I think that Aaron Rodgers is in a reasonable spot if you're playing on a site like Underdog where you can get fantasy points, solely because I also think that over 1.5 passing touchdowns is a good plus odds bet. Inside the 10, they split passes and rushing. I think that Aaron Rodgers is honestly, he's going to take a bunch of those types of touchdowns. And he did look good last week. Seattle, I'm not overly scared of them as a team. Brock Purdy was, you know, injured late in the game and still did relatively well. On the other side, I think that, you know, Jaxon Smith-Njigba had like it was absurd, like a 90% air yards share or something. It was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. I think they're just going to keep feeding them. We watched Garrett Wilson dominate last week. I don't think that this is going to be any different of a type of situation. I think they're going to pepper him with targets, and he makes a good option. I do think that you need to be wary of the trap. Like, there's a 0% chance he ends the season at a 90% air yard share. It has to come down. But I do think that they can give him quite a few targets. He also, the other thing for him was that he was very high on the week in first read targets. So if they're looking at him as the first read and they're just going to throw it, you know, that kind of stuff is going to continue to happen.
Yeah, I have no analytical take or anything on that Jet Steelers game. The one we all expected, right? I mean, 60 friggin' points or whatever it was. Seattle come, you know, you have the old school time zone trend. Seattle coming all the way across to the East Coast. I don't feel great about that. I also am not ready to sit here and say that the Steelers defense stinks. I need to give them another week to show some competency. That was just, had to be a bottom 10% outcome, you would think, for both sides of that football game. But I hear what you're saying. Those are historical, uncharted territory, unprecedented, unsustainable JSN numbers, whatever you want to call it. Just insane. I mean, it's all wheels up for him for season-long outlooks. If you were drafting him, you have to feel pretty good about that for sure. I don't hate Metcalf. I think he's all right. I'm not really forcing any props here. But what a mess Seattle is. And I guess my devil's advocate to the pace, which is really important, obviously. Pace is very important. But Seattle had the fifth highest rush percentage last week, so they're still trying to run the crap out of the ball with you know, Kenneth Walker and Charbonnet. And again, God bless you if you were investing in Kenneth Walker and Charbonnet and you needed something out of them, because that looks like a nightmare to figure out if you have to play one every week. So I'm just kind of collectively out on this game. I'm anticipating, and my brain is telling me that the Steelers will bounce back nicely at home in a really low total, but obviously it would have to be a stark difference from, you know, the circus of a performance they put on last week against the Jets.
You know, Bells, I want to go back to something that you were mentioning about Aaron Rodgers. And Luke, you can vouch for this. You know, if you've been playing, betting, playing DFS, whatever, Arthur Smith, you know, everyone pulls their hair out with Arthur Smith. He runs too much. He's too conservative, blah, blah, blah. And then on the opposite side of that, everyone pulls their hair out over Aaron Rodgers. He's calling too many pass plays. You know, he's, you know, almost somehow this is like, you know, two terrible taste. All of a sudden, maybe we have like a, you know, a gourmet meal here where Rodgers is like the balance that Smith needs, and Smith is the balance that Rodgers needs. Is that possible? Because, and if that's true, yeah, then hammering the Rodgers over touchdowns seems like a great way to start off the year.
Yeah, I don't feel good about 2025 Aaron Rodgers. If we're to be 100% honest, I don't feel great about it. But I mean, as long as he's throwing those touchdowns to Jonnu Smith, I think Arthur Smith's going to be happy. Yeah. You know? He loves the dude. And it's just when you have guys throwing, you know, within 10 yards of the end zone, like, you're generally going to score. It's especially Aaron Rodgers isn't Aaron Rodgers anymore, but he's still fine. You know what I mean? And 1.5 touchdowns, it's low, especially to get, I think it was plus 154. Yesterday, I don't know what it's at now, but I mean, to throw two touchdowns in a game where I think we can all agree, like, I don't think any of us are overly scared of Seattle's defense, and then they're also traveling all the way to the East Coast. Like, it's not a ridiculous thing, you know?
Right.
Do you think that maybe the combination of Arthur Smith and Aaron Rodgers unlocked Calvin Austin? That sounded so gross to say, but Calvin Austin played over 75% of the snaps. We always knew he was a burner. You know, I don't know. He could be a real asset in the betting and fantasy community if he keeps seeing that kind of volume and the role he has. Again, I want to see it again, though, right? There's a lot of things we want to see again. Calvin Austin is one of them, but another guy to just keep an eye on. Another, I don't want to call him a random, but it could be an Arthur Smith treasure, right? That might be his guy for 2025.
Arthur Smith and Aaron Rodgers kind of reminds me of like sophomore chemistry class in high school. Like, it's like, you know, it's like March. You hate this class. You just want to be done. And then like the teacher comes in and he's like, all right, we're going to take styrofoam and this teddy bear, mix them together, and like lightning pops out of it. You know what I mean? I feel like that's possible here. That's possible is all I'm saying. We might have a chemistry experiment. We might have a chemistry experiment. All right, let's go to Indianapolis, where the Colts and Broncos are doing battle. Broncos, 2.5-point road favorites, 43.5 total. Everyone kind of expected the Broncos to look great last week. They did not. Everyone kind of expected the Colts to look shitty last week. They did not. And so here we are. I don't know. Again, this is another game where I'm kind of throwing my hands in the air. If one of you have a strong take, I'm ready to hear it.
You can. I have almost no take here. I hate this game.
It's not great. There are some storylines, though. I mean, we're going to find out a lot about Denver. We're going to find out a lot about Miami. And those worlds are kind of intertwining this week. Bo Nix, it was a combination of Tennessee's front seven looked good, but Bo Nix also looked bad. So I actually am kind of gravitating towards RJ Harvey rushing props, if anything. He looked really damn good. We all thought he looked really damn good. And when I say we all, probably most of us. But you're getting a number in the 30s, and I think, you know, they're going to want to feed him. And that's where my head's at here. I think he'll only get more carries as the year goes on. I think that split will even out a little bit. Granted, you know, Dobbins looked fine as well. Real draft capital invested in Harvey. He looked good, and I think they might want to keep the ball on the ground a little bit more after whatever happened with Bo Nix last week. Keith Eyster likes Tyler Warren, and I totally get it. Boy, huge part of the offense right from the rip, right from the opening drive. You got to love what you're seeing if you're a Tyler Warren fantasy owner. 25% air yard share, ran routes on 69% of dropbacks, 31% target share. Led all tight ends in target share. in week one, by the way, courtesy of Fantasy Points. Shout out to Fantasy Points. Appreciate the hard work there. So, yeah, I mean, where's Patrick Surtain going to play? As far as we know, he's not in the star nickel role. He's not going to be. I mean, God forbid if Tyler Warren's getting the Jalen Ramsey star treatment from Patrick Surtain in week two of his NFL career, then more power to him. But if there's any favorable matchup here on the Colts side, I think it's going to be Tyler Warren. I think the Broncos will, prove that week one wasn't a fluke and they are a very dominant unit. And I would not go back to Daniel Jones props. Like, if anybody's thinking about chasing those, I definitely think it's okay. He played well, but it's more of a product of the complete dysfunctionality of the Miami Dolphins right now. If I had to pick a side there. So again, I don't love this game, but I'm leaning RJ Harvey and I'm leaning Tyler Warren if I'm looking, you know, for some parlay legs or something to look for here.
Yeah, anything else?
I agree with you. Those would be the two spots that I would look. The reason that I'm not on them is, one, there's very few defenses in the NFL where I kind of just like look at the defense and I'm like, yeah, no, thank you. Green Bay this year is getting to that point. Denver last year was that type of defense. I think if you're going to get someone, Tyler Warren's probably going to be the guy. On the other side, I love RJ Harvey. I think he's very good. I don't know if he's going to get more than six carries, though. And, like, I don't know why Sean Payton would just run J.K. Dobbins into the ground instead of giving it to Harvey. But he did week one. He told us he was going to do it. And I don't trust whatsoever that Harvey's going to get any real type of carries in this game. So it's tough for me to, even at a small number, it's tough for me to kind of back him, even though, like, yeah, I do like Denver's rushing attack. And I think that Harvey's the obvious option there, but you know, until they show anything of that, they want to give him the ball. I kind of just kind of move away from it.
Yeah, understood. I mean, I almost think to flip to the other side, right? I said last week, I think Peyton, you know, I'm looking at Dobbins and Harvey kind of like Mark Ingram and Kamara going back, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. And I think Harvey will continue. I mean, I think Dobbins will continue getting like those, you know, goal line, those, you know, first and second down carries. Dobbins is 50.5 yardage prop and plus 140 to score. I don't hate either of those.
Yeah, I do like that 29.5 number for Harvey. I think it actually got bet down from Wednesday. So, logically, I think people were looking at the same thing, but you know, sometimes when a number goes too far the wrong way, I'll play anything at what I think is the right price or the right number. And 29.5 is kind of looking like that for me. That's all I got for you from this one, though.
All right, let's go to Arizona, where the Cardinals, who looked pretty good last week, 6.5-point favorites over the Carolina Panthers, who looked not so good last week. I'll tell you right off the jump, I like James Conner. There's a lot of talk about how Troy Benson was getting more looks, you know, more carries. I forget where I heard it or saw it. They were all in between the 20s. Conner was out there for all the 2-minute stuff. Conner was out there for all the 4-minute stuff. Conner was out there for all the stuff in the, you know, red zone. I like Conner. I think the Cardinals are going to control this game. His props at 64.5 rushing yards. I think he can crush that, assuming that, you know, this game plays out the way the odds makers believe. I'll throw it to you, Bales. You like Conner? You like anything else in this game?
Yeah, I like Conner and Benson, honestly. I think that both of them are relatively solid. I think Conner's a better type of like fantasy player because I do think that he gets all the important touches, really. And then I think if I'm running like player props, I feel like I slightly prefer Benson. They kind of were closer. I thought that they were going to be a little bit farther apart in week one. They were closer than I was expecting. I do think that Trey Benson's more explosive option. Jim Conner is still a really good running back. I don't have any issues with him. And I think that it is a pretty low total, but I also think that that total kind of, you know, brings in that Benson is getting a significant amount of his touches. Overall, I don't really love anything from the Carolina side. I think that we're going to have weeks that we can bet on Bryce Young. I think last week it looked really bad. He's kind of, for me, he's kind of in that like Cam Ward section where you look at it and you're like, wow, that was bad. If you watch the game, you know, he missed some throws, but his receivers didn't do him any justice in the type of dumb mistakes that they made. I guess we'll say it like that. I also don't really want, I initially was thinking McMillan and I really like his game. I don't really want anyone against Will Johnson. He looked legit. I thought he was legit coming out of college. I will nail my own confirmation bias on that. But, you know, it's not going to cost me anything because I'm just avoiding something there, you know?
Yeah, good point on Will Johnson. I mean, Tet was the real deal. After they traded Thielen, I don't know if they had any rationale that Jalen Coker would go on IR, but they obviously had some faith in Tet right off the rip to be that guy. And his numbers kind of show that he was 80% route rate, 42% air yard share. I think maybe the delay, you know, kind of put hampering on his final output too. I mean, he was the alpha in that offense. Again, you mentioned it's a tough matchup. I'm okay with Tet. I scrolled past Bryce Young's 1.5 touchdown props, 1.5 line, plus 194. It looked bad last week, but plus 194 and a 1.5 line, I think is really generous. Don't forget, I mean, before week one, the whole world in the fantasy space was talking about how good Bryce Young closed out the second half. He threw multiple touchdowns in his last three games of 2024 as well. So at plus 190, I'm willing to put a little bet down that Bryce Young throws two scores in a game where they are dogs and they should be throwing the football in the second half.
All right, let's close it out with the marquee game of the week, which I feel like it's not getting the marquee talk. Super Bowl rematch. Eagles, 1.5 point favorites in Kansas City, 46.5 point total. Everybody's hurt. Very condensed offenses all of a sudden. I feel like does it feel like a repeat of the Super Bowl? Or are the Chiefs going to sell out to stop Barkley? What do you think, Bales?
Yeah, I would assume so. I think for me, the one thing I love doing is just taking tight ends against the Chiefs. They are not good against the tight end. They were bad in week one against the tight end. We saw Conklin do really well. I think he only had two catches, but dropped like 50 yards or something. And then we also saw Will Disley catch an 18-yarder. Right before we hopped on here, Dallas Goedert was ruled out, which means Cal Quintero is now going to slide into that tight end role. I don't know if they do. 21.5. Too low. He's a fine receiving tight end. I don't know the crazy type of role that he plays, but he should see plenty of snaps here. And realistically, I'll kind of take most tight ends against this Kansas City team.
And his receptions is 2.5 at plus money, 110.
Yeah, that's nice data.
I think we're going to find out a lot about what's up with AJ Brown this week. You want to talk about, you know, finding some conviction. Scott Barrett from Fantasy Points tweeted out he won zero routes in week one. I mean, you're watching that game. It's not the same as watching the film. You don't get to see all the routes developing. You don't get to see all the fighting on the outside. You see where the camera is, obviously. So, you know, you're casually watching the game. AJ Brown's not getting the football. Why is Jalen Hurts not throwing the ball to AJ Brown? Well, maybe Jalen Hurts was doing the right thing. If the guy's not getting open, he's going to throw the ball to everyone but AJ Brown. So
quickly on that end, though, I also saw that they had a conversation back and forth. Keon Coleman won zero routes as well. I don't want to explain what it is because I don't know like the exact way to put it, and I don't want to talk about their metrics
right
being something that I don't know what they are. I do know, you know, Keon Coleman did very well. I don't know, you know what I mean?
I think that's a case of we talked about earlier, like film and data supplementing one another in a perfect world if you have access to both of them. But if you have any inkling or you think there are some things that might be wrong with AJ Brown, who missed a lot of camp time, and there were some seasons in the past where he missed a lot of time, gives even more incentive to bet a guy like Calcantara or an Eagles tight end or Devontae Smith. So if that's kind of the story you want to tell, like, I think this goes hand in hand with betting SGPs. Like, you can bet a couple SGPs at decent odds and tell different stories. You can bet over on Calcantara. You can take under on AJ Brown yards if you think he's messed up. Maybe you put the over on Devontae Smith too, because obviously their target tree is very condensed in Philly. If they can't run the ball, if Kansas City sells out to try to stop Barkley, which clearly doesn't mean they're going to stop him at this point because he's nearly impossible to stop. So I'm just saying you can kind of tell these stories with game scripts and hunches you might be on with same game parlays. Obviously, you know, rationally play them. Don't be stupid. Go really light on them. But I think that's where kind of us trying to figure out these mythbusters from week one, like what's real and what's not. If you have a hunch, kind of tell your story the right way if they correlate with one another.
You know, before we go, I'm going to put you guys on the spot here. We didn't discuss this. Do we have either one of you have a what we might be calling a prop of the week, maybe? Is there anything? Before you answer that, I'll give you mine. So I'll give you a little time to think because I'm springing this on you. My prop of the week, my best bet of the week, the thing I love the most is Puka over 6.5 receptions at -114. That, again, that seems 2 receptions too low to me.
I quote, you said Puka would need to lose a limb to fail this week. You heard it here first, folks. Jeff Edelstein said Puka needs to be one armless to fail his prop.
Which is going
to
put me in a bad spot, right? Because if he's got like 3 catches in the fourth quarter, now I'm rooting for him to lose a leg. That's
We kid. We joke, obviously. Ha ha. I'm prop. I don't know, but I know the one prop, Bales, that you and I were both like, oh, yeah, was Breece Hall. So, I mean, I don't know if that's like our multi-unit play, but that was one that we both mutually are kind of in on. I do like Breece. I know you like Breece. We talked about Ed Oliver being out. The Jets are going to stick to their game plan and run the ball quite a bit. We talked about Justin Fields and Breece Hall. No offense here. Obviously, they're world-class athletes, being the great value version of Lamar and Derrick Henry, which is never not funny. But do you have any other bet that you have super conviction other than Breece?
Yeah, my favorite bet of the week is just Trevor Lawrence over 21.5 completions. I think the game shoots out relatively well. I don't think that they struggle as much. And I also think that they're going to be losing this game, so they have to throw the ball more. I know that he looked bad last week. If you watched the game, you came away thinking Trevor Lawrence is not a great quarterback. But I also think, the lightning delay, it's very difficult to basically go out play. I think he played basically a quarter and a half, then went and waited like 45 minutes to an hour, played the rest of the second, then went back to a 20-minute halftime. Like, it's not an easy thing to do. And I think that we're going to see a way better Trevor Lawrence this week.
I totally agree. I think Travis Hunter would probably be my honorable mention. So I'm glad you think Lawrence will play better. I really like that line at 40.5 when it opened. So he's like my 1B. I also got Neighbors, like I talked about towards the top of the show. I got him at 70.5. I would probably be okay with playing him up to like 79.5. Again, I'm just assuming Russell Wilson could come with an ounce of competency. Almost had 70% of the air yard share, did Neighbors, huge target share. Deron Bland is out, and the Giants, you would think, would be playing from behind a little bit there. Of course, Russell Wilson doesn't make me feel all warm and fuzzy inside, but I do like Neighbors. I do like your call on the Jaguars. And I guess I'm going to put a little Puka bet in too, Jeff. Maybe I'll do a little two-leg with Puka and Elk Isle Manor on the other side there.
There you go. All right, Luch, why don't you wrap this up for us? You're much better at telling everyone what they need to know than I am.
Well, I hope that's the case. Anyway, again, thanks for tuning in, everybody. Get over there to our YouTube if you like what you saw. Hit that like button. Give us a subscription. We could use all the love. Our channel's brand new. All of our content at Props is completely free. We have pretty much every sport. Anything under the sun, every prop you're looking to bet. Bales has stuff up there. I have stuff up there. We'll be back on this show every Friday to talk about the Sunday slate with fun games and jokes. Nobody is losing limbs on this show. I will guarantee you that. So for Justin Bales and Jeff Edelstein, I'm Justin Carlucci. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next week.